Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
One of the first things you see in witnessing a football game is the spectacular array of colors and uniforms that the teams are wearing. They're all dressed the same on each team. But there's a time when they weren't, and we're going to take you down memory lane to connect you to the years of yesteryear before World War I with Timothy Brown of footballarchaeology.com, when uniforms weren't uniform. It's all coming up with Tim in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Before we get into our episode today, let's take the time to drill that football right into the like and subscribe button on your console so you know exactly when the notifications come up of the latest releases of Pigskin Dispatch podcast for some more great football history. Now on to our episode. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another episode where we get to talk with Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Look forward to chatting. And again, I'm dad jokeless tonight on this one.
Well, that's very disappointing, Tim, because you know how uniform we are of keeping a standard here and staying to script.
But, well, okay. Let me think of one. No, I can't think of one.
All right. Well, my poor attempt at least got us part of the way there, because, of course, we're segueing into a tidbit that Tim wrote titled Before Uniforms Were Uniform. A lot of uniformity there, Tim. So what can you tell us about this story?
Well, it's kind of a same old story in some ways, I guess. Dad joke. You know, I think this is one of these things where, you know, if you think about, you know, where we are today as a society, we are so wealthy. We have so many possessions. We have so much stuff compared to people who lived, you know, let's call it 100 years ago and maybe even a little bit further back. And, you know, I mean, there were a lot of people that they had one suit. And other than that, you know, if they lived on a farm or whatever, they had work clothes and then they had one set of nice clothes. Right. And that was pretty normal, you know. So anyways, and so that kind of situation, that condition transferred over to the football field. So while the folks who had money, like if you were on the Harvard team in 1876 or the Yale team in 1876, they all had matching outfits. You know, they had red or blue stocking caps and red or blue hose or stockings. So, you know, so the concept of uniforms existed. It's just that depending on your circumstances, you may or may not have been able to pull that off. And so especially like in small towns where, you know, the high school team often has, it was just kids getting together. You know, it wasn't, they might have a faculty member that coached them. And that was increasingly the case over time, but the high school didn't have equipment. You know, they didn't have uniforms. Each kid supplied their own stuff. You know, it's like you bring your own pencil to school, you bring your uniform to practice and to the games. And so there were a lot of kids who just, you know, if the school color was blue or red or orange, they tried to wear something of that color, right? They'd borrow their brother's sweater or whatever it may have been, or have mom knit one or whatever. But, A lot of times it didn't work. And so, I collect RPPCs and in this post or in the original tidbit, I show a bunch of images of all these small town teams and these kids just wearing basically whatever they had, hand-me-down pants, hand-me-down jerseys, hand-me-down nose guards, handmade or homemade shoulder pads sewn on the exterior of their jerseys. So, this idea that everybody has to be uniform was kind of that was the standard, but that wasn't necessarily the reality, if that makes sense. And especially, less advantaged, situations. So that's just one of those funny things where, team uniforms then, in a lot of cases, were just like when you were a kid and you got, 20 kids out in the local park or in somebody's backyard and you played. You didn't all have blue shirts and red shirts and, whatever. You just wore whatever you had. And somehow we figured out who was on that team and who was on the other team, right? But I will say too that there are times that even that kind of thing also even transferred to big time programs. So the tidbit has an image of Ohio State's team. I think it's in 1916. And Ohio State was one of the first teams that was wearing friction strips. And so there's guys on the team who have the cool new friction strip jerseys. And then there's a second and third stringers who don't, right? So, even at a place like an Ohio State that, had means at that time, even they didn't just have the budget to just buy all new uniforms for everybody all at once. You bought a certain number each year and you hope that they more or less look the same. But if you made the decision to go to friction strips in year one, not everybody is going to have them. So, it's just one of those things, I mean, if you think about it, if you got kids that have played travel baseball or travel football or whatever, no one goes out without having the same uniforms. And I mean, I remember even like as a grade schooler, somebody's mom would have bleached the uniform or something like that. So it's all faded. And so that kid, looks like a dork, right? But there's no way anybody was going to replace that uniform. That just meant that that uniform was just going to
So
be
Tim,
faded
your
forever.
mom liked Clorox, I take it then.
Yeah. Well, no, I wasn't that kid. I was
Oh,
not that
okay.
kid. I had two older brothers, so
All
my mom knew better by the time I came around.
right. Okay.
So, yeah. But anyways, I mean, it's just one of those things we take for granted that everybody's going to have the same uniform, and it just didn't work that way. And I mean, they're just even when they did have the same uniforms, you'd run into problems of two teams with one's the maroons and one's the reds or whatever, two teams wearing very similar colors because, we didn't have the home and away jersey thing until, the 1950s when black and white television kind of forced that decision on the football, crowd. So
Yeah.
anyways, just kind of a, again, just if it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or whenever this, whatever season it is, be thankful that, you have so much stuff and that your favorite team does too.
This occurred back, back in early pro football too. I mean, it was really prevalent then because people would just wear their college sweaters and then go play for this pro team. The cover of my first book, The World's Greatest Pro Gridiron Team, has a picture of the Franklin team on the cover front to back. And I had more than one person come to me and say, "Hey, this is a Franklin All-Star team. How come nobody has an F on their jersey? There's P's and there's W's." And because people were Penn Quakers, they were playing for Philadelphia Athletics was an NFL team, original NFL team. Their W and J players were on there. They would just wear their whatever they had there, and most of it was their college sweaters. And they took their team photograph that way too, same way they played the game. So yeah, so definitely prevalent everywhere in football at all levels.
And I mean, there's some of the small town stuff. You can see somebody has like it's an insignia from that's totally unrelated to the town name, right, or the high school name,
Right.
but that's what they had. So, that's what you wore.
Yeah. Wow. That is, I mean, that's just a great way to go back and appreciate what people went through when they went to observe a football game or played a football game. And, you know, you did what you had, you stayed within your means. And that was the time. And, you know, some of the greatest generations are because of that they worked hard and played hard because they didn't have much. And you capture this a lot in your work, talking about, you know, football history and your football archaeology. And maybe you could share with people where they can enjoy some of these writings and other ventures that you do.
Yeah, just the easiest thing is to just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's my Substack site, and subscribe. And if you do, every time I, you know, publish an article, you'll get an email that contains the article itself. And if you don't want to get the emails, then just subscribe on the, or follow me or subscribe on the Substack site. So it'll show up, you know, within the application, but not, you know, by email. You can also just follow me on Blue Sky, because I do post, you know, every time that I, every time I publish a new article, I post it on Blue Sky as well. So, or just bookmark, you know, the site. Come on out whenever you want to.
All right, Tim. Well, we really appreciate you preserving the football history and coming and sharing stories like this with us. And we'd love to have you come back as we enter this new year and tell some brand new football stories that people haven't heard for maybe a century.
Right. Ring in the new year with an old story.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.